Barry, do you have any updates from your end?
No. We have now fixed on the date for ICBO next year.
Oh, okay.
So it's going to be in Newcastle, England, and the date is September the 12th to the 15th.
September 12th to 15th?
Yeah, 2017.
And that's in Newcastle?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
And I guess that might be an opportunity to organize something with the European contingent of the Plantium.
Yeah, yeah. Hope I can be there. Okay. And Dario and Brandon, do you want to tell us a little bit about what's going on at your end?
So I've been working on looking at parts of the PO that might need to be augmented a bit to incorporate sort of stranger, more rare morphologies, especially with the spine root sort of thing, and looking through the issue tracker to see where we might be able to contribute with definitions or any problems that have come up, that have arisen, I should say.
Yeah.
And I posted that spine root issue last week. I have a couple just short definitions that I thought I could say here. And Dario has been looking at this lentosoles business that just came up in the last day or so. So
yeah. Oh, here, I can share my screen. I'm sorry. Do you want to discuss those definitions now? I didn't actually put them on the agenda, but
so when I was talking with you last week about how the definitions are structured,
uh-huh.
I basically piggybacked off of what's out there for like spine petiole and those other terms. And so basically, I think that these would be two different terms. One would be spine lateral root, which would be under the lateral root. So as a child of lateral root. And it would be a lateral root that is sclerified and pointed. So very much like what is out there for, in the PO, I should say, for spine petiole. And then there's a case where the entire root is a shoot-borne root, adventitious root, that becomes sclerified and pointed. And so that would be spine shoot-borne root, a shoot-borne root that is sclerified and pointed.
Yeah. So what was the other one? Spine petiole. Yeah.
Spine petiole. Sclerified and persistent. Yeah.
And that, you know, the importance of persistent here is that usually the petiole would probably fall off.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And in these root cases, all of the ones that are spinous, more or less, especially in the case of the one that's just a lateral root, they have a determinate length, really, and they don't function in, you know, a nutritive capacity.
Right.
And so that could be part of the definition, too. It's going for the sort of simplest thing first that I thought we could build on.
Yeah. Yeah, and so I would encourage you to go ahead and post that on the tracker. And like okay. We talked about the other day, maybe put them in each one in a separate post under your on 632. But
okay, so two different comments, then.
Two different comments, yeah. That'd be great.
Okay, I will do that.
First pass, it sounds great.
Okay.
So, Barry, what we're talking about is Dario's been looking at these roots that actually become like spines, which is a new thing for the PO. I don't know if you completely followed that discussion, but yeah. And one is from a lateral root and one is an adventitious root. So it's interesting, you know, we might just look at the definition of root here real quick. Yeah, so there's nothing in the root definition that says that it has to be nutritive, you know.
Yeah, I see this indeterminate growth business is in there, so it might be good to say.
Grows indeterminately, yeah.
Determinate in the...
So these spines actually are determinate.
Yeah, so in the case of the lateral root one at least, they're all very similarly linked, long, I should say.
Right.
Yeah. And yeah, they do not grow indeterminately.
Right.
So I believe that you should get rid of that is usually positively geotropic. If you're going to examine this definition, mm-hmm. that should be a comment, really, not part of the definition.
Probably, yeah. Yeah, and I mean, there must be other cases. We struggled over this definition of root for a long time. These upper level ones are always really hard to define.
Yeah,
sure. Yeah.
Maybe this is something we could look at as well, Brandon and Dario. Is this the definition of actually the parent term root?
Okay.
And Barry's comment about it being so. Yeah, usually positively geotropic is kind of.
So the problem would arise if you wanted to have a child of root, which would be positively geotropic root. Then it would follow from your definition that positively geotropic roots would be usually positively geotropic.
Right. Yeah, and we probably wouldn't have a term called...
No, but still, that illustrates why it's bad practice to have, in the definition, things which are not usually true of the thing defined.
Or the things that are sometimes not true.
Yeah, it would cascade down through.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, that makes sense. Yeah, we can, I'll put those up as comments, and then we can look through the parents and just see if we see any kind of weird potentially there.
Yeah, because remember, you know, remember when a term is a child of another term, it has mm-hmm. to satisfy all the definition of the parent.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, as we add these more diverse types of roots and so on, we need to kind of relook at the hierarchy.
Okay.
Yeah,
makes perfect sense.
So this is great. So I'd encourage you to, you know, go ahead and post those so we can have them written down and people can see them. And
okay. Yeah, that will happen by the end of the day.
Yeah. And then, right, so this is the tracker here. There was something else I was going to mention. I can't remember what it is now. I'll come back to it if I remember later. Oh, so Daria, you had mentioned that you were looking at number 631.
It was 621 through 623, the cotyledon stage questions.
Issue. Oh, okay, yeah, and we can talk about those on Thursday, yeah.
Yeah, and I've also been, or in the last day, considering the lenticel one, I've sort of...
Maybe we could talk about this a little bit, and I can maybe explain... what's going on here?
So my understanding of a lenticel is that it's associated with a Rankomys cork, and so always a cork cambium. Whether that be shoot or whether that be in the shoot or in the root. So I don't know if the term lenticel is necessarily appropriate for something like a sweet potato or any tuber that doesn't have a cork cambium. It seems like there's like valid reasons to consider a new term for the lenticel-like structures in a tuber or in a sweet potato. I don't really have a solution to that just yet. It's sort of where I am with this question.
Yeah. Okay, so just they are using the term lenticel, so this is why I...
And actually it's pretty prevalent in the literature.
Yeah.
Yeah, potato people, that's a huge trait for them.
Oops, if I could spell it, it would help.
Especially when it comes to like disease resistances.
Yeah.
So it's a really good point though, Daria. Yeah. Yeah. So sometimes we have to kind of like find our way between, you know, what's exactly botanically correct and what's in the literature and what people are using out there.
Right. We don't want to upset everyone.
Or only, you know, it only upsets some people most of the
time. Right.
So your comment about the cork cambium, and actually that's in our definition too.
Yeah. And you don't have that in a tuber, so is that term really appropriate for a tuber that doesn't have a cork cambium?
Yeah.
I would say no.
So, and then what would we call it?
Yeah, we see the
tuber. That's where I am in my response. I don't really have a solution just yet.
I mean, so the Wikipedia, not that Wikipedia is the, you know, definitive definition. Yeah. So they actually say a lenticel is a porous tissue consisting of cells with large intercellular spaces in the periderm and the bark of woody stems and roots of dichotomous. So even on Wikipedia, they mention roots.
Right. So where there's secondary growth.
Yeah. Functions as a pore. Okay. Yeah. So this is a great, thing to have this. Oh, there's nice pictures of it too. Huh. On potatoes. Yep. Yeah, there it is on potatoes.
I mean, but these are stems. What we're talking about, these are modified stems without secondary growth, though. I mean, so they're not really roots.
Yeah, it was coming from sweet potato,
yeah,
right?
It was coming from sweet potato.
Yeah, so.
It's actually a storage root. Potato, you're right. Potato is a modified stem, but yeah. So the sweet potato tuber is definitely a storage tuber root. Root tuber. So yeah, this is something we can keep working on, and you know, it's great to have you guys input on this, because it's helpful to have someone with a little more botanical background than we do. So yeah.
Okay, so I'll try to work on sort of like a solution term, but it does seem like you might need a new word or a new combination of words to describe that structure in a sweet potato.
Yeah, that's okay. I mean, the reason why I needed this term in the PO is just I try to make formal definition for the terms that we have in the crop ontologies. And so I didn't find any concept to map to this lenticel in the sweet potato, because the lenticel in the PO was only for shoot. Or
yeah, and I almost think because of the, you know, the, this is that after I looked at the literature and saw how much this was used, I almost think we probably want to make two separate terms, one for shoot axis lenticels and one for root lenticel. The importance of doing that in a way is that if we put it all on just lenticel, if we put all those terms as synonyms or whatever, then you don't have any granularity there. So I'm kind of leaning towards creating separate terms for these. With the common parent term lenticel.
Oh, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, which means we would modify this definition for lenticel in order to encompass both of the child terms. And this definition actually is an old definition. This, you know, the PO kind of started probably over 10 years ago now, and so I can tell by looking at the source of it, and that it hasn't been worked on since. You know, yeah, since this was created. Let's just see what this is. Oh, this is the Anatomy of Seed Plants book, yeah. The reference to it. So yeah, I mean, we can definitely come back and look at this definition of lenticel and make it a little more general if that's the way we want to go.
I think that's valid.
Yeah, yeah, good. So we can talk about this a little bit more on Thursday maybe, and see if we can get this nailed down and get a term added, yeah.
I mean, any term will be.
Yeah.
I
mean, so right now you're just annotating to lenticel.
Yeah.
So, right.
I mean, no. Right now I didn't.
You haven't used it. Yeah.
No, I didn't reference any PO term for this.
Yeah. The definition actually needs a little bit of work. So, yeah, great. And so, I would kind of recommend focusing on this more than those seed cotyledon ones, which are kind of, this is probably higher priority right now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Happy to do that.
Thank you. That's great. And okay. So let's, any other questions about stuff going on there? Let's go back to,
no.
Yeah. Let's go back to the agenda. I have a whole bunch of root traits that I need work on. So this is great that we're kind of looking at some root stuff. So from our end, a couple of things have been going on here. I gave a webinar last week to, I don't know if you guys are familiar to the Ag Biodata group. So there's a group mostly consisting of the USDA database people. So it's called Ag Biodata. I think it's called Ag Biodata, something like that. Anyway, we're kind of honorary members because we're into the ontologies for plants and so on, and so we take part in it. So I gave a presentation on the Plantium to them last week, and I'm just working on getting that video posted onto our YouTube channel, and once that's up, I'll send a link around to everybody. If you want to, you know, then you can share it with your friends or whatever. And So, and then we had a poster session here on campus on Thursday, and Austin and I presented the Plantium poster, and we actually won second place, and we won $100.
Woo!
So that's a good thing.
I know.
And yeah, and Marie was there as well with her GAC poster, GAC's poster. And I think most of this reason that we won was because Austin did such a great job talking it up to the judges. So
yeah.
So, but it was kind of a joint effort. So that's some news here. And we've been working on a number of things and with the ontologies and with the database and the various Plantium platforms that we have. So I put a few notes about this on the Git, on the agenda. One of the things that Chris has been working on with us is adding some taxon constraints into the PO. So this is something we've been talking about doing for a long time. And currently we just have, well, we currently have two prototype taxon constraints that have been added. And we, this is something that it would be really great to have help from the botanical experts down at the garden there. And I know we've been talking about this on email a little bit. So he put, he picked whole plant and put only in taxon Viridiplantae and plant ovary only in taxon Magnilophyta, which are the flowering plants. And so we need to look at these really carefully and make sure that these are correct. I'm pretty sure they are, but one question I had was about red algae. Like, red algae, are they part of Viridiplantae? So, yeah. So I started looking at the NCBI taxonomy yesterday and trying to figure this out, but it's so complicated that... And the other thing we need to think about is that, like, at what level do we want to put these on?
Yeah. So
if you put it on a parent, it propagates all the way down through the, is a hierarchy. I don't think it's going to stay closed though. Maybe it will. Okay. So if you, you know, if we go and look at the hierarchy of the PO, isn't terribly helpful, but actually maybe the down browser would be better. Yeah. So, you know, if we plant structure encompasses, this isn't very helpful. The whole plant is actually a plant structure. And so the question I had was, do we want to put this on whole plant, or do we want to put this on a higher level such as plant structure? But then that encompasses all the plant structures. But I think that's true. So, you know, this is something we kind of need to think about very carefully, or the plant, you know, the highest level on the anatomy side is the plant anatomical entity. So is it more appropriate to put this taxon restraint at that level or further down? And we do, you know, we do encompass the lower plants and we encompass the algaes. So we have to think carefully about, you know, what we're going to tag these things with, because it will make a difference as we move ahead.
Yeah, I mean.
So this would be a really great thing to get you guys to help with. I know you were interested in. You made the mistake of saying, oh, we'd love to have some things to work on.
No, this is perfect. This is good.
And now I've given you like six things in 3 days.
No, it's great.
It's great.
Yeah, and so...
I'm taking notes, so...
Yeah, and so, I mean, these taxon constraints are really important, and we need to get them right.
You're talking about rhodophytes, right?
Yeah. I guess so, yeah. Red algae, yeah. You know, and then we started talking about microspore because Chris had looked at the GO definition of microspore development and it was tagged as only being in flowering plants.
Yeah, so, I think what Dennis is talking, so when Dennis has responded with the fern groups that he has,
right,
we're talking about ferns that if I'm remembering the email thread correctly from yesterday, what I was noticing is those, you're talking about heterospora spores, spore-forming ferns, right, where you have, you know, two different types of spores in the same plant.
Right, that makes sense. And I wasn't sure exactly about that, and so he, of course, can just pull this out of his brain in no time.
Yeah, and those groups he talked about, they
yeah. So, you know, when I saw Chris had added it just on flowering plants, of course, I knew automatically that gymnosperms have microspores, but then, of course, these other, you know, I didn't realize that some of these lower plants did, and then, of course, the ferns, and so the question that we're not exactly sure how to deal with this taxon constraint, and this is probably some more of a Chris question than for the people on the call here. So we've been discussing with Chris how to deal with these ones which have, yeah, like different taxa that aren't under a common ancestor. And the way that GO is dealing with this is they are creating like a separate taxonomy ontology. So that's what this discussion here is, these taxon unions. And Chris says these are actually kind of a pain. So what they do is they create this, I've put it in bold here. So they use, this is the relationship we would use only in taxon, NCBI, taxon, blah, 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 for the correct one. But so they create this specialized ontology which has these union classes, which would, so for example here, this one is Viridiplantae or bacteria or Euglenozoa.
So these are, you're basically mapping like characteristics, like autapomorphies or synapomorphies onto these things. So only in a certain group or unites all of things in a certain clade or something like that is what these statements are doing?
Yeah, yeah. And that way they get around the problem of, because if we put, you know, this only in taxon relationship is very strong. I mean, it says it's only in that one taxon. So then the other option here was, we were talking with Chris that maybe we can say only in taxon, you know, angiosperms or gymnosperms or like all these other ones here that are listed in the example of the microspore. And so we're going to kind of try this out and see how that works. And if we're not.
So is there not some term which encompasses all and only the items on this list?
No, there's not. That's the problem. They don't have a common parent term.
Yeah, this would be a polyphyletic group.
Yeah, so, you know, the flowering plants and the gymnosperms, maybe, but once you, and then we have one member of the lycopods and the selaginella, and then these various mishmash of different fern families.
Yeah.
So.
And how many terms in the plant ontology are going to be annotated with this only in mishmash taxon so-and-so?
Well, I mean, this one, we're just talking about microspores, but there's going to be a lot of other types of structures in plants that are common in, you know, they've evolved differently and or evolved similarly in different taxa.
Yeah, the problem I see is that if you have one mishmash taxon for microspores, and then you have another slightly different mishmash taxon for macrospores or whatever it might be, you're going to end up with a whole porridge of mishmash taxa, and it will be more trouble than it's worth to maintain that information.
Yeah, and I think that's why Chris said that these are a pain in the go to maintain.
Yeah.
We're feeling the same way.
And so I think maybe the best solution is if we can, and that way too, you know, you'd like to be able to go in and say, show me everything that's in this taxa. And I don't know how that works.
Yeah, you won't get that anyway. What you'll get is information in the other direction, namely, show me those things which are restricted to this taxon. And then you will find, if you have all these mishmash taxa, that even that question will never be answered quite well because of all the extra bits to the different mishmashes.
Yeah.
So have you thought of replacing only in with something weaker, such as found in or present in? And then that will give you positive information, and you can have as much positive information as you like without the need for any mishmash.
Yeah, that's actually as a suggestion. And that's something we probably have to discuss with Chris a little bit.
And at these higher, if I could just poke in here for a second. Yeah, sure. A lot of these higher level relationships, or I should say, you know, yeah, higher level relationships where you're talking about the relationships of rhodophytes to something else, a lot of these groups aren't, you know, the phylogeny is not set in stone, really.
Yeah, exactly.
Look around. And so a lot of these groups aren't, not, I shouldn't say a lot, but some of these groups aren't, you know, unequivocally monophyletic, or the sister relationships are perfectly known. So I just see lots of ways this could be really troublesome.
Yeah, and that's why I think that keeping it to the positive information that you know is correct, for instance, present in taxon X.
It could be just one trait of interest or something.
Will save time later, and you can always add in the more expressive only in terms as soon as you have relevant higher level categories where you have good reason to believe that a specific type is present only in all the taxa which fall under those specific categories.
Right.
Yeah, and
which you can do in some cases already, I assume.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, in the relation ontology, they have a super property of the only in taxon that is just in taxon.
Yeah.
So maybe this one can be used. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that you should use it.
That would probably.
I think that's what the Go does, if I remember correctly. I haven't looked at this part of the Go for a long time, but I was involved in devising the taxon specificity rules.
Oh, okay.
A long time ago. I haven't seen whether they have evolved, but I'm assuming that in taxon is used a lot, and only in taxon is used less.
Yeah, often. I don't know either. I mean, Chris showed this example,
yeah,
has only in taxon,
yeah,
and then this taxon union.
Yeah, I think it's a dangerous thesis.
Yeah, the only, it reminds me of like the swan, the Popperian swan sort of thing. The only is just
exactly.
A strong, you know.
What was that, Brandon? What was that? I didn't
it reminds me of the swan argument, the Popperian black and white swans sort of scenario where you could say all swans are white until you find the black one, right? And
yeah,
this only really, I think the only is very problematic here.
Yeah. In most cases, I think there are some cases where you can, so plant, cell wall only in plant is pretty safe.
Yeah. Although, yeah, I guess so. So that's something to think about, and we maybe have to talk with Chris a little bit about, because I actually didn't, he actually stuck these in late, was it like last week or on the weekend? No. Or
yeah.
Like maybe Friday they appeared. So this is good discussion, and maybe, you know, we could look at and make sure the ones that are in there right now are really true only in these two taxa. None of the other plants have ovaries, like the gymnosperms, right?
Can you say that one more time?
Gymnosperms would, no, yeah, gymnosperms are a magnophylleta. Magnophylla. No. Yes, no?
Wait, what?
No, they're not. Those are just the flowering.
They're green plants, though. I mean, they're above your, so we're Verita plantae. But yeah, they're not angiosperms.
But they don't have ovaries.
Not in the, I mean, they don't have an ovary in sort of the same way. No, they don't have a protected.
Right.
They don't take an ovary, yeah. So
okay.
That's where their naked comes from.
Yeah, so we can look at this a little bit more and talk about this. Eventually, we'd like to add taxon constraints in the TO, but I think we need to kind of sort this out in the PO first.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess if you have taxon constraint in the PO and then you have link in TO to the PO, right. I mean, you can infer.
It would carry them over.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So that's a good discussion about that. So when we were discussing this with Chris, he was like, well, let's start with the most straightforward ones. So I'm not sure sure which are the straightforward ones, but you know, maybe if you have time to, if you botany folks over there have time to kind of look over the PO and see if there were ones that were straightforward that we could put in easily, that would be a good place to start with them, I think.
Okay.
Some of these ones like microspores are maybe more complicated. Yeah, like the plant ovary probably is a little bit more straightforward because that's a very special. Yeah, now that I'm thinking about my botany, yeah, that's the main characteristic of angiosperms, right? The protected,
the very surrounded, protected. Yeah, right. Yeah, there are. I mean, some of the more, I know, apparent or conspicuous angiosperms might be easier to map, but maybe not. I don't know. We'll have to look through the list. There are lots of obscure things that have evolved many times or lost many times. I mean, in some cases, it could be maybe better to put the term at the highest level and then infer that it has been lost several times. I mean, it depends on the optimization of this mapping. You know, it's, I don't know. Yeah,
so I think if we use the in taxon relationship rather than only in taxon, then we could do that.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, the only is pretty strong.
I mean, because, you know, something could even look the same way and it's been involved multiple times. It's not actually...
Might not actually be...
Structures, or, I mean, it's... Yeah, there's... I don't know. It's interesting. We can definitely look through a list and do suggestions or something.
And at the same time, you know, we should actually be helping the Go folks with any plant-related terms that they have.
Uh-huh.
You know, and this came to light when Chris put this on that the microspores were only on the angiosperms, and he's like, well, that's what it says in the Go. And so we looked at the Go definition, and so they're kind of Tanya Bernardini, who's with a Rapidopsis information system, TARE, what it's called now. She's, you know, having to relook at those definitions, and so we could, if you're interested, I can share that link to that tracker on the Go list and see if we can help them modify it at their end as well, because we'd like
to be interesting.
Correct in the Go, because in the way, I don't know if you understand the way this all works between the different ontologies, but in the Go, they have a couple of areas that kind of not really overlap with the plant ontology, but we try to be orthogonal with them.
Uh-huh.
So anything smaller than a cell. So for example, like Barry mentioned, the plant cell wall.
Yeah, the cellular component or something like that, I
cellular
think.
Cellular component. It's actually a Go term.
Yeah,
we don't have that in the PO. We let the Go deal with those. Mm-hmm. And also, they have all the biological processes. Uh-huh. The U.S. way. So they have a term for like microspore development, the process of microspore development, and they, you know, link that back to our term microspore. And so it's important that we are both on the same page. Both the ontologies are kind of on the same page in terms of, you know, where these are and okay. how they're annotated. So, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, that would be interesting for us too.
Yeah,
so, I guess that'd be like assignments, so that is good. We are happy to delve into these things.
Yeah, wonderful.
They're fun.
All right, so kind of moving on, I think that's probably a good discussion on that. One of the other things that Austin and Marie and I have been working on, we were looking at in the TO, there's a lot of terms that have multiple parentage. And we started looking at one case of these, which are the morphology traits, which are also a quality trait. And we're trying to figure out the correct relationship to relate these two traits. And I have an example here, like pericarp texture. So pericarp texture is definitely a pericarp morphology trait, but it's also a fruit quality trait in many cases. And right now, most of these are ISA relationships, just from history. They've been in there for a while. Some of them have been put in as part of, but that's not actually technically correct either. And the reason being is that if you say that pericarp texture is a fruit quality trait or even is part of fruit quality trait, it means that every single instance of pericarp texture has to be a fruit quality trait. So we've been kind of discussing what relation we might use. And you said that Chris suggested causal.
Any causal relationship, yeah. I mean, because the quality here is not the BFO quality, not even the Pato quality, it's more the breeder quality. So right. It's more something loose, very loose.
Yeah.
So This is why we think that it should not be a subclass of relationship between the threats and this big grouping.
Yeah.
It's just a grouping, basically it's just a grouping category instead of a real hierarchy, I think.
So can you send me an email with a list of 4 or 5 examples of the ones you think are most problematic when compared to the BFO quality?
Yeah, but they are really not BFO quality.
Yeah, it doesn't. Yeah, so fruit.
So that would, I would like to see what the, I would like to look at them to see what they might be.
Yeah, so it can be cooking time or taste.
But we can definitely send it to you for sure. And so I want to show you. So in plant trade, so we have this category called quality, which is. And maybe it might actually be less confusing perhaps if we renamed this branch too.
Yeah, agree.
Because it's really like almost a subjective value of the product. And one of the things we talked about last week was when we were sitting together and talking about this was maybe we should. So the other thing here is there's a division in the quality branch of the TO between plant products and actually like plant structures. So one thing I was thinking of was maybe we could possibly change the name of it, and then we could maybe make 2 divisions in that branch of the ontology for qualities of plant products and qualities of plant structures, because we're getting into this thing, like Marie said, with the crop ontologies where they have a lot of traits that have to do with the process, like the cooking time or the taste. Well, that could be either a plant product or a plant structure, but
I mean, if that's still the same plant structure, if it's cooked.
Yeah. Well,
I mean, for me, it's a different.
Or like lumber from a tree. But yes, we can definitely send you some of these. And Austin, I think when we were talking the other day, you had another point that you had suggested maybe we could deal with the qualities. I was just
suggesting that we use the different relationship instead of having those traits be direct children of.
Right, or part of. And so we looked over the different relations and we haven't really found any that seemed to be appropriate. So we thought we'd bring this to the group and people can kind of think about it. And I'll make a note to send you a list of them, Barry.
Yeah, so that I think it's... it may be a lot of work to divide them up coherently. But still, it would be good to see how much work would be involved.
Right. Yeah, so I mean, currently under quality trait, we have kind of a mishmash.
Yeah, so one line of attack, which does in fact solve the problems and does not depart from good ontological principles, is to treat the really weird ones to be just reports, like measurement reports. So they are information entities rather than qualities. But still, it would be good if I could see a brief list.
Yeah. I mean, just looking at, if you on the screen here, like hull color or, we have a bunch of seed ones here, like seed coat color.
Yeah, I don't see why that is such a problem, provided we have seed coat to be the bearer of the color quality.
Right. But the problem is it means these are always part of this seed quality trait. Whereas sometimes it is and sometimes it isn't, right?
So explain why it sometimes isn't.
Well, I mean, some seeds, the color may not matter to the price that the farmer gets.
Oh, I see.
Right. That's where it becomes subjective. Like some things, the color is important to the quality of the final product.
Yeah, so that's... so what you're saying, in other words, is that from crop type to crop type, it may be that seed coat color is either present in the list of factors in the trait or absent.
Right.
And it's an all and only thing. So it's always relevant for crop type A, but never relevant for crop type B. It's not farmer to farmer specific.
Right. I think the former is true.
Good. So
he's in our list.
Yeah, yeah.
And I thought that the structure of the TO was going to be such that there would be CO children of TO, which would then deal with the corresponding crops one by one. So couldn't we just have crop specific children of seed quality trait?
Could.
And then the idea would be to find a way of defining crop specific children in such a way that the seed coat color is respected by TO as being a possible factor, but it's only made a specific necessary factor in some CO specifications of TO.
Could you repeat?
Okay, so I think actually it's clearer to me now. So TO should not mention seed coat color. Seed coat color should only be mentioned in those CO trait lists where seed coat color is indeed a relevant trait factor. But that would be the correct way of dealing with it.
Still, a seed coat color is still a morphological trait, but it shouldn't. What you're saying is it shouldn't be a quality trait. And you see, in this case, we have seed coat color, and then we have a child of it, the lentil ground color of seed testa.
Yeah, you also switched to English spelling there.
This is coming from the lentil ontology.
Yeah,
I see.
I mean, we kept the labels.
Yeah, so in a way that kind of makes sense. What you're saying is probably the TO shouldn't have a quality branch at all. These would be children. So this morphological trait, seed coat color, would have a child of it, which is a quality trait in lentil.
Or it could be that some of the cooking or brewing quality, for instance, are misnamed.
Yeah, it should not be quality.
Yeah.
Yeah, but what would be the name then?
So we are working actually on adding a new term to BFO, which may be relevant here. So you're familiar with BFO dispositions?
Yeah.
Functions are a special kind of dispositions. Functions are dispositions which entities have because of the way they were designed or the way they evolved. So the function of the heart is to pump blood, because the heart has a disposition to pump blood, and the reason why hearts exist is because the organisms which are their hosts pump blood. Now, there are many dispositions which are not functions, but which are very good for the organisms that have them. For instance, the disposition to germinate, or the disposition to learn language, or the disposition to ripen. It's not the function of a plant to ripen, but it is a disposition, and it's good for the plant to ripen, just as it's good for the heart to pump. And so we want to call these things capabilities. And it could be that a large number of the things on this list would be properly classed as capabilities, which is a special kind of disposition. It's a disposition which is good either for the entity in question or for some surrounding entity, such as the society which grows the plant in question.
Capabilities.
So for seed fertility is a capability. Seed viability is a capability.
Capable of fertilizing.
Germinating. And actually, the gene ontology already uses capable of, and they use it in a very similar way to the way we're using capability. It's just that they think that every time you have X is capable of Y, you are dealing with a function. And that is not quite right. You're actually dealing with a capability, which is, there are far more capabilities than there are functions. So I have a capability to breathe, but it's not my function to breathe.
Mm. Yeah.
Anyway, that's just food for future thought.
I'm trying to think how that would relate to this, the qualities, though.
Yeah, so I can go through and pick the ones which it's clear to me are capabilities.
There are some on here, yeah.
Yeah, some of them are too technical for me to understand.
Seed coat color doesn't seem like it would really work with capable, though, capability.
So why is seed coat color a relevant trait for plant breeders? Because it tells them about disease or what?
Yeah, it can.
It can, or it can be, you know, in some markets, perhaps they prefer a certain color.
Okay, okay.
Or it's marketing.
Yeah.
Okay, so that would be a quality then.
Yeah, but I think this point is interesting because I, looking at this list, I can actually see quite a few that the capability, like dry matter digestibility.
Yeah.
Capability.
And I think probably strength in stem strength is probably analyzed in terms of capability. So stem strength is a measure of the capability of the stem to support a certain load, I assume.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so it stands up, it doesn't like fall over and lodge.
Yeah, and then I'm puzzled that brittle comb should be a child of stem strength. Can you explain that one?
No.
Okay, so strength here means either strength or weakness.
Yes, it would seem so.
And what you want, I guess, is not a brittle comb.
No.
So you want actually here to have degree of non-brittleness or something.
Yeah, flexibility or...
Yeah.
That's definitely one that probably shouldn't be there.
And flexibility then would be a good example of the capability.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Any thoughts from the group on what might be a better name for this branch? Because I do think that quality is a little bit, I don't know, we could maybe come up with a better, more explanatory name, I think.
Nothing comes to mind here.
Let's see what the definition, so it's the commercial or economic value of the plant product.
And do they mean is or do they mean determines?
That's a good point. It determines the commercial and economic value.
So when I go down the list, everything I see can reasonably be viewed either as a quality or as a capability, providing it's properly labeled. Mm-hmm. So you want certain things for like seed color for purely qualitative reasons. People like certain colors, not because they have any capability to do anything, just because they look nice.
Right.
But then people like strong stems because the strong stems come with the capability to support a heavier load.
Right.
And the same with digestibility, the same with thermostability. And there are some which are just badly named. So dietary fiber related traits is just, that is an umbrella. It doesn't mean anything at all. And we should try and get rid of those.
Yeah. It's very vaguely written. Yeah. All right. So we'll keep talking about this and Barry, we'll send you a list of them and we can discuss it some further and maybe capability is a way to.
Actually, I don't need a list. I think I've seen enough now, and I can always look at the definitions myself. So just let's do one more. Why wrinkled seed? Is that because people like wrinkled seeds?
Oh, it doesn't even have a definition.
We don't know.
It probably people don't like the wrinkled seeds.
Okay, so then we need to think about whether we want to divide these into the plus features and the negative features. Yeah. So if they go to determine economic value of plants, then some of them do this positively and some of them do this negatively.
But you know, I think that gets down into really plant specific or crop specific.
Yeah.
Weeds, because in some cases maybe, you know, a red-colored seed is adventitious, and in some cultures, maybe they want it to be white.
Yeah, but surely that would be dealt with at the crop ontology level, not at the trait ontology level.
Right. Well, that's what I'm saying. I don't know if we can split traits into positive and negative.
Yeah. So I think that the problem here is that the person who wrote this list, or the people who wrote this list, were thinking about the economic value, what you're concerned with, and they were not thinking ontologically, and so you just get odd expressions.
Right, yeah. It's kind of a mishmash.
And so water absorption by seed would better be regarded as a seed capability, namely the capability of the seed to absorb water.
Yes, that's definitely a capability.
And that's what you want. So you don't, the fact that a seed absorbs a certain amount of water is not determining its economic value. What determines its economic value is the capability of all seeds of this type. And it's there even if they never absorb water.
I just want to clean
this. Yeah. This is great. A great discussion. Yeah. Okay, so I think we're kind of getting down towards the end of the hour. I think we probably should move on. Yes, Marie has a little demo she wants to show us.
So go to the scene.
Yeah. So. Okay. Just click here.
Yeah.
Okay. It'll take a second with my computer here.
Yeah, I don't know if it's going to work. You just have to wait a second here. So I've been working on a visualization of where the different crop ontology map to the TO, and see this is the result of it. So it just takes a little time to be organized, so you can see the different crop, the different nodes. Nodes color will tell you which ontology it is. The size of the node is related. It's only for TO. So the more mapping you have to a specific TO term, the bigger it will be. And then we have also the type of relation between a CO term and a TO term. So yeah, the green one is the one that were mapped as subclass of, the blue one were mapped as exact one. And yeah, everything that is in gray is just the TO hierarchy. And so, yeah, that's what I've been working on. And I don't know if you have feedback, if you think it's interesting to have such a
Can we zoom view. In?
We can zoom in, zoom out.
Yeah. So it would be interesting only if you promise me that in any year's time, it will be very beautiful.
I mean, I don't know. It's good.
You don't think it's beautiful now?
No, I think it's a warning sign that there is danger here.
Why?
Because it's so complicated.
I mean, this is a TO. This is...
Ontologies are complicated things, Barry.
No. Only at the beginning.
You can see that the disease... I mean,
yeah, I want it all to look like the thing at the bottom.
No.
Just 17 big blobs like that, and then I'm happy.
Okay. So what is you zoom out and you can see the blobs and you can just say okay what this is.
So when you mouse over it and it shows the name.
Yeah,
that's
so this
awesome.
Is also, so this is diseases, so this is fungal disease. Yeah. So it's because diseases are very important for breeders. So that makes sense
way,
you know. This is insect disease and yeah, in the TO we don't have really specific. I mean the branch, the tuberous tuber morphology traits, I mean, is not, don't have any depth. It's not very...
There's no chill terms.
So that's why all the threat map here. I mean, you can can get some information from that. And there's then the root quality. So this is all the threat for, cooking time about the cassava or the sweet potato, because I mapped two of the...
So... Is every TO term mapped to at least one CO term?
I think it's the other way around.
Yes.
But I'm interested in the other way around. So I'm viewing this as a picture of the TO and of the success with which the TO is capturing the structure of traits in the CO ontology.
Right.
And the TO is doing very well if it has a lot of reuse in the different COs, and the TO is doing less well if it has very little or zero use in the COs. So, again, my question is every TO term mapped to at least one CO term?
No.
I mean,
okay. So what fraction of the TO terms are not mapped to any CO term?
I mean, a lot. That's all the little blue dots.
And why are they in TO then?
Well, people use the TO without using a CO.
Okay, good. So what would happen then if you got rid of all the blue dots here that are not mapped to any CO term? Would it be more beautiful?
I mean, you will get a flat list, basically.
Oh.
I mean, all the hierarchy is in TO.
Okay. I see. So then, are there any leaf nodes in TO which are not mapped to any CO term?
Yeah, probably there is.
Well, can you get rid of all the leaf nodes? Because the hierarchy should stay the same if you get rid of the leaf nodes.
You mean in terms of the visualization?
Yeah.
That actually would clean it up.
Yeah, but sometimes we have exact match and sometimes we have sub. I mean, sometimes the CO terming exactly the same or kind of exactly the same.
So keep those cases where leaf nodes have exact match relations. Get rid of those leaf nodes which don't have any relation. I think we can see the structure better if you do that.
That's actually an interesting idea. So what he's saying is like exclude these ones that don't have anything. But yeah. I mean, it's just a suggestion for the.
It's just an experiment.
Yeah, that would actually be.
And then the other thing you can do as an experiment is just have the exact matches and the child of relations. Just not to get rid of all the other stuff, just so that we can see what it looks like if you just keep those relations.
Okay, but I won't be able to have a graph with the TO.
And what do you mean by a graph? You mean a connected graph?
Yeah, a connecting graph.
Okay, so you don't worry about the connectedness. There will still be a lot of hierarchy left, will there not?
No, I don't.
So you're going to keep all the leaf nodes, which are either such that they have a child term, which is a CO term, or an exact match to a CO term. And you're going to keep all the other nodes, you'll still have a big hierarchy, you just won't have the leaf nodes. I'm losing my train of thought here. So the idea is you want to see on your graph how CO terms are children of or exact matches of TO terms. You only want to see that information. Now, in order to see that information in a useful way, you would need to keep the hierarchy. So you keep all the parents of those terms and all the parents of those parents and so on. But you get rid of all of those terms in TO which have other kinds of relations to CO terms but do not have a child of an exact match relation. And the reason is that the backbone of the TO should be the backbone of the TOCO total structure, the reason why this is ugly is because it doesn't have a backbone. The backbone should be what you get when you just have the ISA relations.
That's the result of that, I think. Because the backbone is the TO hierarchy, and the reason why it's messy is because the TO is messy.
Okay, then at least we know what work we have ahead of us.
Yeah, because I can show you just the TO. I also did that only with the TO, and it's the same.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
And that's sort of how we came to this discussion about the multiple parentage.
Yeah. So, okay, we need to clean up the TO. That's it.
Yeah.
We shouldn't waste too much time mapping to the CO until we have a cleaner TO.
Yeah, I do agree. Yeah,
good. Okay.
That's why Marie's here.
Yes, that's why I'm here.
Yeah, good.
Yeah. Great.
All right.
Well, I think on that note, we should probably wrap up, and unless anybody has anything else they want to add.
No, I think the demo was very good, incidentally. It's ugly, but good.
Yeah. And one real quick thing I just wanted to mention before we hang up. We haven't closed down the old Planetology site, but Justin has set up a redirect.
Yeah.
So that if people go to the old Planetology site, now they'll be redirected to Planetology.
Yeah. So what I still would like to see on the main Planetium page in the middle is some kind of graphic display, a clickable graphic display of the ontologies which form part of the Planetium, so that you can go to the ontologies directly from the first page.
That would be great. Yeah, we had been kind of talking about that, Barry.
Yeah.
So maybe like with TO and PO?
Yeah.
That'd be interesting. You could take your model and put TO and
yeah,
PO.
Yeah, but that's, yeah. So yeah, we, Austin is helping and we are working on better visualization.
Good.
Yeah. And then whether or not you can click on one of those and go to the term page is something for...
It can be done. Very easy.
People, yeah.
That can be done. We already do that on the front page when you hit the main Amigo page.
Yeah, but I'm talking about from like this visualization.
Yeah, they can be done too because
it's the same links. So
okay, well that's cool. That'd
yeah,
be great.
Justin was able to add
the test. Nice, very nice. Anything new from your end, Justin, that you want to add? Quiet.
Well, I didn't have a whole lot to say with what you guys were talking about. I can't think of anything right now. I mean, like you said, all the PO stuff is now redirected. The dev and beta has been for some time, but now the live is as well.
Great, great. And I got these notes correct on here because I'm getting ready to write up an announcement.
No, the second thing where you have all Amigo traffic, it's actually all traffic. The Amigo traffic is still available. The old Amigo site is still available under archive.
Right. But if you go to planetology.org, you'll be redirected to
Planetium. To plantium.org, not browser.plantium.org.
Okay. Yeah, I got this out of the email, so I don't know where that came from. Okay, good. That's great. And we can go to the, and we, if you put in our, if you want to go to the old Planetology site, you just put in archive at the beginning.
Yep.
Yeah. And so we're kind of looking at the content that's still on there and seeing what needs to be ported over. And so it's still there, but right. You just have to put archive at the beginning. Mm-hmm. Great. Oh, and just a heads up to everybody. If the deadline for registration for early bird registration for PEG is coming up fairly quickly, in 2 weeks or so. So be thinking about, you know, who's going to PEG, and I know Pankaj isn't on the call right now, but I'm going to discuss it more. Yeah. We're organizing a symposium on the Saturday, and okay. Great. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. Thanks, Barry. Bye.
Bye.
Okay. Stop sharing, and then I gotta stop recording.